Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. The Metropolitan Opera and New York City Opera. Call them the Yankees and Mets of New York's opera scene. One is well-financed and stocked with expensive talent. The other has a reputation as a scrappy underdog. Unlike New York's baseball clubs, however, the two opera houses have long had reputations as bastions of elitism and exclusivity. But this year, there's been a barrage of initiatives to try and soften that image and capture new audiences. Just today, in fact, the Met is hosting an open house that features tours of the famed house and the chance to attend a final dress rehearsal. Joining us with his reaction to all of these changes is Anthony Tomasini, the chief classical music critic of the New York Times. Anthony, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks a lot. It's always nice to be here.
So we've got an opening night performance of Madama Butterfly.
Monday night, yeah.
With Anthony Minghella's direction,
right.
And it's being beamed into Times Square.
Yep.
We've got subway posters for the opera. I mean, what's going on here?
Well, Peter Gelb, who's a very smart guy, was brought in with the idea that he would really try to reach out, to take opera out to where young people are, to where neophytes are, and he's doing that. He's very savvy about the latest technologies, and the Met is now going to, you know, it's been reported on a lot, they now are going to broadcast into movie theaters across the country, with fancy sound systems and, you know, digital video, and it's all these things are terrific. You know, like, why not? You know, bring it out there. If it helps, that's great.
Right. Now, Peter Gelb is doing that at the Met. His first official day is Monday, isn't it? I mean, although he's been there for a year.
I think actually he may have started in August officially, but
okay, but. Still a new player on the scene.
Yeah, no, very much.
What about City Opera, though?
Well, the City Opera is a little different. They have always tried to make their house inviting to people. Their campaign more has been to get people there, to come to their shows. Paul, I think it's very important, every arts institution, every institution of any kind, including the New York Times, should be able to say, this is what we do. This is our mission. Not all performing arts organizations can answer that question. Paul Kellogg can answer that question. He says, we present our, you may not hear the internationally most famous singers in the world here, but we're going to present opera as a real vivid form of drama with more innovative productions than a lot of more traditional companies, more contemporary works, specialties like Baroque opera, with young, talented casts of people who look like the roles that they're singing. And that has been his way of trying to get people to come. They've had these Opera for All programs where there's seats for any seat in the house is $25. So they have tried to get people to just be interested and show up for something. The problem with the question I have for Peter Gelb's outreach through movie theaters and radio, you know, and streaming on and digital things on online, will that entice people to come to an opera, to go to a house? I don't know. I'm not sure. I have my doubts, but I hope so. That's his hope.
Well, this with City Opera, as you say, their Opera for All was a chance for people to get a $25 seat in the opera. How did that work out for them?
It was packed, and all those performances are, from what I understand, sold out. Also, their statistics apparently are that roughly 70% of audiences have never been to the New York City Opera before. Now, that's terrific.
We actually checked with a City Op spokesperson earlier today who told us that 90% of the people who came to those four performances were not in their database.
Wow.
90%.
Well, yeah, that's pretty terrific.
But then it raises the question you just asked about the Met, is how many of those people will come back?
Well, again, this is a way of reaching out. Now, this is where maybe it dates me a little, or maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I grew up with the Met broadcast, and I lived, I lived just over the Queens border in Long Island, so I could come into the Met tube when I got a little older. But those broadcasts really hooked me, and it was partly because it was the radio, and it was so mysterious. As a kid, I listened to these things. I didn't know what I was listening to. I remember almost my favorite parts were the ovations, because I thought anything that gets people so excited has to be terrific. And it was so mysterious, it made me have to go to the Met. If you're sitting in a movie theater with fancy camera work and digital quality visuals and surround sound, and I wonder if that is, assuming that gets new people to come in the first place, I wonder if that's going to seem like an experience unto itself.
Well, let me go back to the assumption there within that sentence. Do you think that showing Madama Butterfly or Il Trovatore or Wagner's Ring on a movie screen is going to get opera newcomers to actually go to that movie theater?
Let's see. I hope so. You know, Peter Gelb certainly hopes so. It's an intriguing idea, and he may be right. I have a feeling you'll get a lot of people who already are opera buffs, opera people going. But there is a chance that you really will hook in some people who really want to just give this thing a chance. You know, give this thing a shot.
But wasn't that the idea behind the PBS broadcasts of operas years ago?
Yes, and PBS has, in the last decade has withdrawn a lot from their commitment to. But now that Peter Gelb is doing this, they're getting interested again. I mean, he's enticed PBS sort of back. After these things are broadcast in the theaters, they're apparently, from what I understand, the PBS will show them also. So, yes, that was the idea. I always felt that those broadcasts were not presented in the best way. I mean, all of a sudden, pow, there was Tristan and Isolde, on PBS. No introduction, no campaign to build it up, no nothing. I remember Paul Kellogg once trying to talk in the days when PBS did one city opera production a year on television. The season that they did The Mother of Us All, the Virgil Thompson opera with the Gertrude Stein text about Susan B. Anthony, he tried to talk them into choosing that one. And he said, you could have all these preliminary programs on the American women's suffrage movement, on Susan B. Anthony, on Virgil Thompson, on American music in the 1940s, on Gertrude Stein, who's huge now. It's so topical. And instead, I think they went for Tosca. And it was a big disappointment because it seemed like it was a chance to really turn it into an event, to really educate, use television as an educational medium to prepare the broadcast. I think that's one reason why the audiences for the PBS opera broadcasts started declining.
We're speaking with Anthony Tomasini. He's the chief classical music critic of the New York Times, and we're talking about the sort of two-pronged approach that the Metropolitan Opera, under their new director, Peter Gelb, and the New York City Opera, under their artistic director, Paul Kellogg, are taking to try and really make a concerted effort, you should pardon the pun, to get new audiences into those houses. The Opera for All Festival, just because of the ticket price, do you think that what was your takeaway from seeing four full nights of $25 seat houses?
I think the price was a large element of it. I think a lot of young people thought, are sort of alert to any bargain. And, for young people should know, too, that the Metropolitan Opera has a student student tickets available for not all, but most, I'd say about half of their productions, $25 any seat in the house. But I think that was largely it. It was also the way they presented it very well and made it seem like a happening, you know, event, that's something you wanted to check out. But, you know, it does raise this whole issue of the price of high culture and the charge of which you, in your setup, you know, of elitism, mm-hmm. which drives me crazy to hear this. A couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I did a long piece about this where I compared prices at the Met with like prices at Madison Square Garden for the Knicks. And of course, the Met is much more, this is the Met, which is the premier institution, was much more affordable. And, you know, a cheap seat at the Met is so much richer an experience of, you know, what you're seeing than a cheap seat at Madison Square Garden for a basketball game or a hockey game. And actually the acoustics up in the fourth ring are terrific at the Met. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these institutions, they are pricey, but my goodness, sports tickets are expensive. Rock concerts are expensive.
Top seat at City Opera is $125. A seat at Shakira's concert at Madison Square Garden is $129.
Yes, and there are very affordable seats to all these places. Plus, as I pointed out in this piece, if these top institutions are just out of your price range, there is no performing art. I would say, maybe I have I'm prejudiced on this, but it seems of all the performing arts, classical music and opera, there are more free and affordable opportunities in a city like New York than any other performing art. You can hear Kurt Mazur conduct the Juilliard Orchestra, which is a fantastic orchestra, at Avery Fisher Hall for free. You know, like events like that happen every year. For $5, you can go to the conservatories and see terrific student productions of things. You know, there's so many opportunities all over New York.
And maybe that's where outreach, you know, maybe that's where people are missing the boat, instead of these huge outreach programs that go to the subways or the schools or wherever. Maybe it's just, let us know about these things.
Yeah, that's one. And should help with that effort by making these things known to people. But there is this tendency among a lot of young people when they're new to something, when they think, opera, I should check that. Where should I go? I want to go to the best. They want to go to the Met.
Sure.
You know, they think we should get in there.
But then they should know about those half price, those student tickets that are available for half of these shows.
But they should check out, you know, these things. But again, my question and my hope, but my question too, will be, will they go, will they hear live music, unamplified, natural sound? I mean, I think I've told this story even in this sitting in this seat before, but when I was a kid in the stratosphere of the Metropolitan Opera House, this was in the very last year or so of the old Metropolitan Opera House, I remember having the vaguest idea of what Aida was about. But the sound of Leontine Price's voice just drifting up and encircling me, like in the soft pianissimo high note, I just couldn't believe it. Yeah. I said, this is for me. And it was years later that I found out what was going on in Aida. And I'm not saying that that's not important. Of course, it's crucially important, but it's the sound of this stuff. It's the live experience that has to, you know, has to hook you.
And there is that voice, yeah. Leontine Price from Carmen. We're speaking with Anthony Tomasini. He's chief classical music critic of the New York Times. And let me pose, Anthony, your question to our audience. Will you go to see and hear the live, unamplified, the real thing in an opera house if you've been exposed to it in Times Square or through a subway billboard or through seeing it on the big screen of a movie theater? All of those are ideas that are in place, and you can call us and let us know. 212-264-7483 is our number. 212-264-7483. The World of Opera wants you. Do you want them? You can also email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. We'll take your calls in just a moment. Leontine Price singing the habanera from Bizet's opera Carmen. Anthony Tomasini is chief classical music critic of the New York Times. And, you know, Anthony, look, this is a tune that even people who've never been to the opera in their lives might be familiar with. You turn on the television and half of the perfume ads are sung to O Mio Babbino Caro, right, or something like that. So, I mean, these tunes, some of them, are still out there in the culture in a very, very kind of populist way.
No, I think that's one surprise and an attraction of opera for people who are new to it, that they discover that they actually know a little already, and that's certainly exciting. I have a slightly different take on that question, though. As Paul Kellogg is something he's figured out at City Opera, that if there's one advantage, if you want to put it that way, of the decline of appreciation of classical music and the poor music education, it's that young people don't have a vested interest in the standard repertoire. And if they hear that there's this gripping production of this thing called Of Mice and Men by Carlyle Floyd at the New York City Opera, with this guy, Anthony Dean Griffey, a tenor, giving a performance that, you know, critics are saying if there were the equivalent of an operatic equivalent of an Oscar, he would win. They think, hey, that sounds neat. They're just as interested in checking that out as they are Carmen or La Boheme, since they don't know them. You know, like, and he's right that if you can sort of, just the way Broadway will, you know, that you'll see people go to, like when The Crucible had a revival here a few years ago, with Liam Neeson and Laura Linney, because it had a couple big stars in it, it drew people, and it got good reviews, it drew people to the theater who didn't know Arthur Miller, who didn't know The Crucible, who didn't know modern drama, probably, or the Salem Witch Trials, or they thought, wow, let's go check this out.
Right. Well, let's check out a few of the calls that are coming in. We're speaking with Anthony Tomasini, the chief classical music critic of the New York Times, in the wake of a lot of attention being paid to both the Metropolitan Opera and New York City Opera for their campaigns to reach out to new audiences. Let's begin in Yonkers with Dorothy. Dorothy, you're a longtime opera fan?
Well, yeah, I was saying that it must have been back in the 50s when I was a child. There was a series of operas shown at our local movie house. And my parents took me. And actually, I think it was Tosca. And it was just, I was astounded. I must have been 10.
Was that your introduction to opera?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, except probably on the radio.
Right.
But
right.
That was the first, I mean, it wasn't live, but the first staged opera I had seen. And it stayed with me. And I hope that will happen with the Met showing opera. The other thing is, with the cheaper seats, a friend talked us into getting tickets on the day to the Metropolitan to Rotolinda. Mm-hmm. And then we realized that the Met had reduced its subscription series to the cheaper seats. So for the first time ever this year, we became subscribers, which we've never been able to afford before.
All right. So,
so it's working.
In fact, you know, price does play into this in a way, Anthony, even for people who are fans.
Yeah. Also, her experience with the movie theater, with seeing things in movies, that's great. You know, I didn't mean wondering about this, I don't mean to suggest that it's not thrilling to see the visual component of opera, and that alone may make it a clinch for people that, I get it, it's theater, I'm at a show, it's drama. You know, I'm sure that may work, you know, and that's Peter Gelb's idea, but as I keep saying, it's that you've got to get into the house. You've got to hear the real thing, to hear the real thing.
Yeah. All right. Let's cross the river to Brooklyn, and Patrika joining us on Soundcheck. Did I get your name right?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Have you been to the opera?
Yes, I have, quite a number of times, but it's really not affordable. And I think they're making the right move by taking it to the people. Theater is for everyone. And there are people who, of course, would really love to go, but they can't. And this half price that you're talking about shouldn't just be for students. It should be for everyone who wants to go to the opera. And another thing is taking it to the people, make them feel like they belong. Because, I mean, going up to the Mets or so on, people might believe that they will be looked down upon. It's an elitist kind of a thing, and therefore it's not for them. And the art really should be opened.
Yeah.
Otherwise, let me ask you. The doors of the opera house is closed. You know, in a place like New York, enough Broadway theaters are closing their doors, which is a shame. I'm an artist, and I do believe that it should be opened up. And whoever that person is that is taking it to the people, I say bravo.
All right. Well, Patrika, thank you very much for calling us. Let's move right along to Stephanie, who's calling from Long Island. Stephanie, how about you? Are you a longtime opera fan?
Well, I have to say, just as Anthony was saying, I grew up, I'm 45, and I grew up to the Met on Saturday afternoons with the Texaco Presents. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was.
Yes.
And I went to one opera maybe 20 years ago, to Carmen, which I love. And I like opera, but I went to one of these shows just 2 weeks ago to the City Opera. I sat in the front row for $25, and I saw La Boheme, and I got hooked. And I really think it was just what he said. I loved to hear the live voice. So I don't know that without really experiencing that power of being in the audience, that whole movie theater experience is going to bring the people in. We have to figure out another way to get young people to come in and hear those voices live. It makes you cry. It's so beautiful. So now I'm on to the Met. I'm going to buy my tickets to see Turandot because I love the music of Turandot and I've never
Stephanie,
seen it live.
Thanks very much, Stephanie. Let me give Anthony a chance to respond.
Yeah, I think that if she were to contact Peter Gelb and Paul Kellogg, they would make a commercial starring her because that is exactly the story that they're hoping will happen, you know, be duplicated. That's a great story. And her reservation about the movies is again, I emphasize, just my slight, it's more like a question than a reservation. I wonder, I'm curious to see how this will happen. But it does seem like another way. You know, it's another avenue.
Well, and it is an avenue that is right now open and being explored. Mm-hmm. And we've been speaking with Anthony Tomasini, the chief classical music critic of the New York Times, and with some of our Soundcheck listeners. Thanks to everyone who's called. And Anthony, a pleasure to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
In a moment, forget about movie theaters and the Times Square Jumbotron. Opera is on YouTube.com, and we'll find out what's there in just a moment. Then later, Joe Purdy, the singer-songwriter, has been featured on the TV show Lost. He'll perform live here in our studio. This is Soundcheck.
Sempre un amabile leggiadro viso, in pianto in riso e menzognero.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You don't actually have to go to the opera to see opera. In fact, you don't have to go any further than your computer screen. Fans of the online video site YouTube know that you can use that site to watch clips of your favorite pop bands, but opera buffs are increasingly making use of the site as well. James Jordan edits the opera blog called Parterre Box, and he frequently posts videos to YouTube. James, you heard our segment with Anthony Tomasini. He was wondering what the efficacy of presenting opera on a movie screen or the Times Square Jumbotron might be. Do you kind of share his reservations about that?
I certainly respect Anthony's opinion on that, but I think there are so many different ways to enjoy opera. I mean, I came to opera through listening to LP recordings, and it was maybe 3 or 4 years before I actually saw a live presented opera. I was listening to opera on the radio, listening to records. So I think listening and seeing opera on the big screen, or even seeing it on the small screen, is a really great way to learn if you like opera and what you like.
Well, in your case, it's a very small screen sometimes. Why put opera or clips of opera on the internet, and specifically on YouTube?
Well, there's an old saying that if you scratch an opera queen, you're going to find an opera professor. We love to teach, and we love to share our what we call our knowledge, and especially our passion about opera with others. And YouTube is just another way to do that. Used to, people would trade cassette tapes, and then later on, now we have YouTube, and it's a fantastic way to find a performance that you like that is not out there, that people haven't seen before, and people can see it, they can comment on it, and they can become interested in maybe a new singer or a new opera they haven't heard before.
So it's rare materials, it's things that are out of print or were never commercially released. All sounds vaguely illegal to me.
Well, I don't like to use the word illegal. I don't think anyone would like to use the word illegal.
Yeah.
The thing is, a lot of this stuff is stuff that it's really it's really difficult to know what the copyright is on it. You know, this is something that's been lying on a videotape for maybe 20 or 30 years. Some of it older than that, you know, and some of it, you know, old grainy copies.
Mm-hmm.
So
easier to ask for permission, ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission.
I think so. Oh, okay. I mean, you know, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't even play one on the internet. So I can't really have any opinion about that. I do think it's important that this kind of information should be available to people. That, you know, it's much more important, I think, for these performances and this information to be out there than for it to be locked up in some closet while lawyers wrangle over, is this in copyright? Who has the rights to it? How should it be released? And so forth.
All right, we're speaking with James Jordan. He edits the opera blog Parterre Box. Self-described opera queen, although we're getting a little of the opera professor as well this afternoon on Soundcheck. One of the clips on YouTube is, it's a small but stunning clip of Maria Callas, 1964, in the opera Norma. Here's a little bit. All right, Maria Callas in Bellini's Norma from 1964. James Jordan, the audio is not great, the video quality is not great, but she leaps off of that tiny window on your little computer screen in a way that is absolutely striking to anyone who has heard of the mystique of Maria Callas and wonders what all the fuss is about.
Absolutely, and what's even more unusual about this clip is that there was only about 2 minutes total of film made of this production of Norma in 1964, and it's the only film there is existing with sound of Maria Callas in Norma, which was her greatest role. So this is, you know, this is like having a film clip of Sarah Bernhardt or a film clip of Mozart himself performing. This is all there is, and, you know, all you have to do is click on YouTube, and there it is for anyone to see. It isn't hidden away someplace.
And so this is not just for the opera buffs of long standing. For someone who's a newcomer to opera, an interesting thing would be to compare this Maria Callas performance to the Montserrat Caballé performance of the same piece, you know, where she's sort of standing woodenly in the middle of a television set.
Well, I love Montserrat, and so I would never call her wooden. But she's a very different sort of performer, and I think it's a very interesting comparison to go, yes, maybe the singing is more beautiful over here, and the dramatic impetus is more striking over there. The cool thing is, there they both are, and they're only a click of the mouse away.
Right. And there are some rather unusual, I mean, you've referred in your on your website to unnatural acts of opera.
Well, that's the name of my podcast, which actually links off my webpage. The thing is, opera is such a big and grand and exciting and emotional thing that dull opera should be an oxymoron.
Right.
That opera needs to be unnatural if it's going to be anything. So that's the kind of opera I like to promote.
Now, there are some rather unusual things available to opera lovers or potential opera lovers on YouTube. Among them, Thomas Kvasthoff, the great German singer, doing an improvised scatting solo at a jazz club. Wow, that's Thomas Kvasthoff, and that's actually from Miles Davis and the Kind of Blue album, and there's Kvasthoff doing this improvised scatting. It's one of the videos that's on YouTube, and again, we're speaking with James Jordan. He edits the opera blog Parterre Box and frequently posts videos to YouTube. With all that the Met and City Opera are attempting to do to get new audiences, is that unnatural? Is that demented enough for you to go back to what you were saying before we heard that music?
I have to say the current multimedia plans, especially from the Met, are about the most demented news I've had in in years. I mean that in a good way, in the sense that it's exciting, it's new, it is, you know, it may be an incredible success, it may be a huge failure. I'm hoping it will be an incredible success. But the idea is it's taking a risk, and that is what opera is all about.
All right. James Jordan edits the opera blog Parterre Box. Check out YouTube to see some incredibly fascinating and, yes, sometimes frequently demented videos from the world of opera. Here is one of the most popular right now. It's called simply Opera Kid. Listen to this 8-year-old German kid trying to sing the Queen of the Night aria from Mozart's Magic Flute. And then we'll take a break and we'll have singer-songwriter Joe Purdy joining us for a live performance on Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.